Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everything is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff. This is the finale of the trilogy of the men of Marvel and why we love them, why we hate them, and why the Marvel movies aren't what they once were, even though sometimes they're really good. When they're good, but when they're bad, they're not bad in the sexy way. I'm John McDonald, and I thought that off the top of my head. I'm John McDonald, and I'm here again with my fabulous, lovely, ecstatically beautiful co-host, Magnus. Hello, Magnus.
Greetings, everyone. And I just had my own thoughts as well. This podcast, the Men of Marvel episodes we've been doing, it's been like one of those unexpectedly popular films. They create one. They don't expect it to be a hit, so they end up making the sequel, and now we're on the trilogy. So let's see if this one can be a hit as well.
Gonna be better than Dark Phoenix. Yes, I know, I have thoughts. So just to give everyone a scope of why we may not get to everything you might expect we talk about today, because there are quite a few men to cover still. I'm just going to give you a list of all the movies that came out starting from where we left off in 2017. Bear in mind, this list does not include streaming things like Falcon and Winter Soldier. It doesn't include TV things like Legion. And so there are parts of the Marvel Universe this even leaves off. But this is a list of the MCU movies from 2017, Spider-Man Homecoming on. So there's Spider-Man Homecoming, where we left off, Thor Ragnarok, Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War Part 1, Deadpool 2, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Venom, Captain Marvel, Avengers Endgame, the sequel to Infinity War, Dark Phoenix, Spider-Man Far From Home, The New Mutants, Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Venom Let There Be Carnage, Eternals, Spider-Man No Way Home, Morbius, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Thor Love and Thunder, where everyone started hating Taika Waititi, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumanium, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and I'm throwing Kraven the Hunter in there because by now we've all seen Aaron Taylor Johnson doing his best thirsty jungle Tarzan fuckboy impression, which really is what it is. I'm not mad about it. Everyone has seen him in Fabulous Bullet Train if you're an Aaron Taylor Johnson fan, so I'm not mad about it. But yeah, so that just gives you a scope. So when I say that Marvel has this idea of using the Marvel MCU movies and in some cases Disney Plus streaming to go back to the studio system of the 1940s, they're pumping out as many films as like Universal pumped out monster movies, which was what Universal did for a long time when they brought in European directors fleeing Nazi Germany. So like, it really does feel like the old school studio system. It's very insular. Here in the middle of phase three is where we're going to start seeing, especially Black Panther, for all of its really good stuff, because I think it is a really good film, has that problem we start to see with Marvel of trying to cram in too many things that thread to other things. And so we're going to start seeing a real shift in the films, in the tone of the leads, not just racially, but also in the tone of the kind of not queer-coded, but definitely could be queer male villains. At the end of last episode, we ended with Marvel using Tom Holland to sell this spider twink idea. And of course, watching interviews with Tom Holland, I don't know if the writers knew they were doing it. I don't know if Tom Holland has any concept of himself as a twink. I don't think he does. Possibly. But it raises the question of, for me, if this is really Marvel being more overtly queer baity. Because people just don't sexualize Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, this way. Some people do it for Andrew Garfield, but in a way, Tom Holland does feel like the younger Spider-Man. There's a daddyfication of Tony Stark and the guy that's Mysterio, who's really Jake Gyllenhaal. But he's playing Mysterio, but Mysterio in the comics is a lot darker and a lot more mysterious and much more dangerous. And it feels like they're kind of playing up the sex. It feels very queer baity. It feels very much like, you know, bisexual spider twink, which is the thing they wouldn't let Andrew Garfield be. It's not bad. Again, Spider-Man is not my favorite Marvel anti-hero, hero, Marvel whipping boy as it is, because Peter is always Marvel whipping boy. But it's just, you know, Tom Holland is not bad. He's an adequate Spider-Man. He's not my favorite. It's one of those things where, like, I feel like this is really showing in Phase 3 where Marvel got too much power and got cocky, and the film started to show it. And while Tom Holland's Spider-Man trilogy is really good, it does feel very queer-baity in portions. And I think the fandom kind of went along with it because they want Tom Holland and Tony Stark together, or they want Tom Holland and Jake Gyllenhaal together. And that's not bad. I also lust after Jake Gyllenhaal in my heart. But does that make it a good Mysterio as a leading male villain? You know, is Jake Gyllenhaal as Quentin Beck or Crisp or whatever the hell his last name is? Is he a good Mysterio, I guess, is the question, you know?
I think I approach it from a slightly different angle. I acknowledge the aspect of queer baiting within MCU, because I fully acknowledge the fact that there is probably a great deal of cynical thinking from behind the scenes about looking at the looks, looking at the actors they've got to use, and starting to realize like the power of fandom and the power of shipping. It's all like, yeah, I think the reason I approach it differently is I quite like the aspect of shipping and such. So I don't mind it so much, but I really do acknowledge the fact that it is clearly there. I mean, you don't come up with really good leading men out of nowhere. They don't always get it right. Just to touching upon a certain Pratt that we've discussed before, but I don't want to set you off again.
It's not your fault. It's really his. Yeah. He took the ball and he ran with it, but yes.
I think Tom Holland's Spider-Man trilogy really showed the quality that they could get if they had a really good leading actor and they knew what the themes were they were exploring with the trilogy. You see Peter focusing on trying to be heroic, but dealing with grief and loss and such continuously throughout his trilogy, and trying to find his way when he's losing the various mentor figures and such that he was at first relying on to help guide his way out in the world, up to the point of the conclusion of what really was a really great ending to the trilogy, and with No Way Home, and really kind of a love letter to Marvel and Spider-Man in general, not the MCU. I focus on it being a love letter to Marvel and Spider-Man particularly, and you know, it's film history and such. That's my general thoughts about that. I really do feel it was a really well-crafted trilogy, but maybe it is some of the better quality films that we got from that period.
I don't think Homecoming is bad. I like Michael Keaton as the Vulture, also because Michael Keaton hadn't played Batman in a while, but he had played Birdman, and so Michael Keaton is the Vulture. I really like it. I think I like Tom Holland more when they don't try to set him up against a sexy daddy, because then Tom Holland can come into his own. It's one of those things where I feel like Spider-Man Homecoming suffers from, we have to tie in Tony Stark to this deal, because this is the movie in which Tony Stark proposes to Pepper Potts, which isn't bad, but Homecoming for me, when I heard about it, felt more like a continuation of an Avengers movie. And it just felt, I started to feel the tie-in, I started to feel the exhaustion. And also, I just don't gravitate towards Spider-Man, even when I play the Lego Marvel game. So it's also, it's for a particular consumer, it's not bad. It's Spider-Man Homecoming. Tom Holland is a fine Spider-Man. for those of you that love him, good for you. I'm happy for you. The movies are very serviceable. He's not an awful actor, just in terms of eye candy, of being kind of that Troy Bolton High School Musical sort of twink, doesn't do anything for me. But that does not mean it's not for people. I do love Zendaya. I love his best friend in this, who also was in Hellfest. I can never remember the name of his best. Jacob Batalon, I think. I'm probably getting the name wrong. I do think as a trio forming, Spider-Man Homecoming brings them together, and it's a really good kind of underground trio in the MCU. Mm. But that's Spider-Man Homecoming. That's just the start of Tom Holland's legacy as his own leading man. And I think it's a very successful part. And unless he has something else to say, we'll move on to Thor Ragnarok, which is kind of the next one.
No, I'm happy to move on to Thor.
All right, Thor Ragnarok. This is the movie where Loki really gets sexy. He really does re-enter the MCU. This is going to lead to his time variant and all the fan shipping of Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston together. Ragnarok is Taika Waititi at the height of his power. If he was a member of the craft commune, this is when everything is in the middle of the movie going right. I think this is probably, I would say 90% of people, when they think about the Thor movie, they love, even though we saw buns in Love and Thunder. I think Thor Ragnarok is the one that people really respond to. For all the bisexual women, you get Hela, and you've got Heimdall here. He's doing sexy. You've got Chris Hemsworth doing sexy. You've got Tom Hiddleston doing sexy. This is a very sexy movie. This is also where Valkyrie comes in, who's bisexual. I think Thor Ragnarok does a lot of work as a really great movie, and I think the leads feel balanced, and there's a little bit of sexual attraction for everybody here. I'm always going to be Team Thor, personally, not just in comics, but in this movie in particular, and I think knowing what we know now about Taiki, it's probable he injected the bisexuality into the script, potentially.
Oh yes. I'm not sure I have too many extra points actually to add to what you've just said. I think what you've done is a very concise and coherent sum up of Ragnarok.
If we were going to talk about MCU in terms of Marvel streaming on Disney Plus, I would have more to say, because this is really the re-rise of Loki. We haven't really seen him in a position of power. And the problem with this is that Marvel is now owned by Disney, so it's approaching things through that prudish lens. So you can't go full pansexual Loki from the comics. You can't have we see this more in artwork for Tom Hiddleston as Loki now, especially Loki is female, but still with Tom's features, Loki pregnant, Loki is different animals. And so Thor Ragnarok, just as an MCU movie, succeeds because it's one of the few that isn't tying in 10 properties, but all the leads feel really balanced and very sexy. So, yeah.
Speaking about tying in properties, though, would you say that Thor Ragnarok works as a conclusion to the trilogy that started with Thor? I know that they added on a fourth with Love and Thunder. Yeah. I'm not sure whether to count Love and Thunder as a standalone Thor movie or as part of now a quadruped. Sorry, I'm not sure I'm getting the word right. Quartet? Quartet.
Film.
See that as a separate, as part of that, or is it purely the build-up to Infinity?
Well, Thor Love and Thunder was something completely different. It was meant to be a standalone movie. So Ragnarok really is the end of a trilogy. But Ragnarok, for me, is probably the Thor that is most like comic book Thor. Ragnarok in the comics leads to, you know, the Asgardians taking over a part of the middle of America. Which I'm kind of sad we didn't get, you know, the Bifrost crashing down and Thor creating his own state in America and Tony Stark being like, hey, bro, what you doing? I think that Thor Ragnarok is Probably one of the most thoughtful and maybe of the later phases, potentially one of the best. It's up there with the second Captain America movie for me. Not just because the leads are good, but because they're good with the story. There is some gratuity, sexiness with Thor Ragnarok, but you also have kind of sibling energy, which deepens how sexy Thor is, and it makes Loki more human, which also makes him approachably sexy. You've got Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster being the most chaotic pansexual in the entire galaxy. It's one of those things where Thor Ragnarok, if the MCU had kept that trajectory, would probably still be making movies people really wanted to see rather than movies that people were going to out of obligation, I feel like. I will say, too, Ragnarok starts a pattern of the idea of home that we're going to see again and again and again, and about the rehash of found family. It's like they took the lessons of Guardians of the Galaxy and were like, how many times can we redo this found family trope with both family and not? Like, you could do Thor Ragnarok almost as like a Golden Girls clone and give like a Golden Girl. Like, you could do Loki as Blanche and Thor is Rose and like Hela is Dorothy and like the Hulk is Sophia or like the Grandmaster is Sophia. So you could totally do like, even if you look at the Into the Verse Spider-Man movies, there's this idea of found family and home that we're going to see over and over and over again. And I think if you think about it long enough, Ragnarok is really doing this work of really centering that idea in a good way. It's not bad necessarily, but it is a thing to consider in. I found Thor sexiest when he had accepted his chaotic, wild, adopted brother, and he kind of let go of the Shakespearean affectation.
Indeed. It's so, do you have any more thoughts of Ragnarok before I stop?
I think everyone should see it, and the soundtrack is amazing. Also, this is one of the better posters. If we want to talk artwork in queerness, a lot of the posters for Marvel feel very similar and lazy, and we definitely start to see that with the upcoming Avenger War movies. But Ragnarok is the one that's circular with that lovely acid green in it, and even though there are a whole bunch of people in the poster, it feels very symmetrical. Ragnarok succeeds on many counts.
And I will say that there is one point to consider. We're starting very much to reach the ending of this generation of actors within the MCU. You have to admit they did a fantastic job actually keeping a general coherency amongst their interconnected main cast for a while, but this is all leading up to Infinity, where it's like their big hurrah. They're, pretty much like the original Avengers now meeting their different fates and such.
I will also say, as we head into Black Panther, because this will come from Black Panther, I'm a fan of shipping Thor with people, and I think Thor and Hulk work in Thor Ragnarok. And it's something that I wish we'd gotten more of later. So, yeah.
I saw a lot of fan art of Hulk and Thor, so you're not the only person to think that.
Deservedly so. If we end up doing like a big deep dive into some of the movies, we can talk about Matt Damon playing fake Loki and whatnot. But we've got a lot of movies to get through, so we'll hustle our buns onto, I
Black
think,
Panther.
probably the best of the end of this generation. Black Panther is the most diverse cast, the most thoughtful. It's not just sexy, it's got a coherent, almost spy thriller-like quality. There's some good double crossing. The cast is on point. I think that Black Panther, I actually studied I studied fashion specifically in this movie because it was so authentic and so on point. This is a movie I feel like, especially for queer people, there's a lot of other in this movie that it embraces really well. And even though T'Challa and Eric Killmonger and M'Baku aren't necessarily queer, potentially Martin Freeman's Everett Ross's, because Martin Freeman always gives us a little bit of queer energy to me. I think Okoye, even though she is married to M'Baku, could potentially read as definitely queer. I think Black Panther is probably one of the best MCU movies. And if it had all been leading up to Black Panther, they could have gone out on a high note, I gotta be honest. Of course, this is the movie that famously the girl saw it and like broke her retainer biting down because of one of the male cast members, because she found them so attractive. So I think I speak for many people when I say this movie is full of very, very attractive people, and also a very not white lead, which is kind of refreshing for the MCU that has been very, very white up until this point. And then they were like, no, no more until the next movie.
This is the thing. So the MCU here was very, they weren't being very subtle about it. They were trying to very much challenge their own diversity issue. They knew that they had to start trying to tell other stories and such, and not just bring out the same hunky white leading man all the time. And the thing is, though, Black Panther transcends what they set out to do. I think that they were honestly shocked themselves at how good it was.
Yeah.
I had high expectations going into this movie, and those expectations were met, I shall say. And it scores highly across every point, like narrative, it as a self-contained movie as well. Like there's clearly connections to the wider MCU, but I think this is one of the stories that they've done in recent years I think you can watch without having to see too much else.
Yeah.
And that is, we're going to start seeing that as more of a major problem of Marvel trying to, you know, shoehorning in people into its own canon. but here it doesn't have that problem.
I think for me, something this movie does well, if we're just talking about leading men, there's a variety of body types of male superhero here.
Yes.
Forrest Whitaker as Zuri, who's kind of like a second player hero type, has a older male body type. M'Baku is bigger in Hulk style, but Black Panther and Eric Killmonger are both slightly more spry, more agile. And so this succeeds for me, not just racially, but because the heroes all exhibit, even Everett Ross is a different body type. One fault of superhero movies that we start to see as criticism now, especially around Black Panther in 2018, was the discourse over kind of these male figures and if this was sustainable. You didn't really see it for Drax. You didn't see it for Star-Lord because everybody was still in love with Chris Pratt really for a long time. But here in Black Panther, it's not just racially diverse. There's different male body types that work really well. I do enjoy that it's racially diverse. I think it was sorely needed.
Yes.
I have the same criticism of DC. I've always had that criticism of the idea of diversity. There's something very wonderful about this, too, that I also get from Pokemon in this kind of urban versus rural technology versus magic thing. You also get that in Black Panther. There is this idea of the old guard, and there's this idea of people fighting for power but doing so with honor. Black Panther is really, it almost feels like a Star Wars fans Marvel MCU movie to me in a way. And I think that's really nice.
That's a good take on it, actually. And I can see why you say that, because of the sort of the hero's spiritual journey, because there is a good deal of mysticism as well within this movie, which is quite enjoyable. And the an actual struggle to be like what it means to be a hero. Bless Chadwick, he really did leave us far too soon, and
yeah,
but he gave us such a great performance here.
T'Challa is compassionate, smart, and kind. So beyond being incredibly sexy, incredibly muscular, you know, having the responsibility of taking the mantle, there's something about T'Challa and Black Panther where it could have gone really bad. He could have been like super entitled. They could have written him to be less giving. When Black Panther first was part of Marvel Comics, he wasn't a descendant of Wakanda. It was more like he was just kind of hanging out in Hell's Kitchen. And so, like, there's something great about this origin story that feels really pure. The idea that Wakanda wasn't hiding because they didn't want to be taken advantage of, and then stepping into the world on their own terms, almost like T'Challa steps into the mantle of being Black Panther. I think it actually does a disservice to abrupt. I kind of feel like if Chadwick hadn't passed, it's possible, like Tom Holland, they would have given him his own trilogy of movies that weren't so dependent on others. And they could still potentially do that with the Black Panther franchise, because I think Wakanda is its own unique place. And because they don't have the Genosha or the Asteroid M for Magneto, they really don't have a place like Wakanda in the greater MCU universe that is on its own. It's not like DC, where every hero has their own city, and they all look the same.
No, I completely agree. To me, it's quite clear that they were positioning T'Challa to be one of the main heroes going forward in the upcoming movies and such, but then unfortunately real life events occurred and they had to shelve those ideas. Sadly, there is going to always be a little bit of what if with what happened, but that is what it is, shall we say.
I will say, for the lesbians listening in, Black Panther, great female representation.
Yes.
Costumes are not just accurate, but also very, very handsome or sexy or beautiful, whatever does it for you. We might end up doing a show just on Black Panther at some point. I'm not going to make any promises because I may need some time after Marvel, because I have some Marvel burnout. Yes. I need some self-care. But just to acknowledge how important Black Panther was, and it didn't feel like it was just fan service. It really did feel like it was thoughtful, and them being sexy was just the amazing bonus, to be perfectly honest, for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
One very last point from me before we move on regarding Black Panther. Michael B. Jordan gave us a great, memorable villain.
Yes.
Eric was certainly didn't feel like your normal flat Marvel B movie villain, basically. He was great.
Also, Killmonger is a great name for a villain. Indeed. It's on the nose, but it's so on the nose it's almost funny. So it works really well.
Yes.
And then unfortunately, sharp, steep decline into Avengers Infinity War, where all of your favorites are on the path to death and the points don't matter. And everything people do to try to do good ends up falling to, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but it's true, based on fan art, Bottom Daddy Thanos. Most of the fan art I have seen of Thanos is doing like full Bottom Daddy energy, and it almost always involves the Infinity Gauntlet. It's almost always a group scene, almost like the Avengers Infinity War poster. There are a lot of issues with this film. There are some great things in this film. We've got Nomad Steve Rogers with his beard. We've got that great scene on the battlefield with Thor and Steve seeing each other again, where 1,000 new ships were launched. I really think Banner having trouble becoming the Hulk was really great. But there's so much that happens in this film in order to satisfy this being the film. This was the 19th film in the cinematic universe, and they've been building it up to it for so long. And there are so many subplots, and so many circumstantial things, and so many people that meet to go to a place. It's just like, at the end of it, were you watching anything? You know? So many sexy men all in one place, but it didn't feel fun. It just felt like now we're doing this thing with the stones.
I will say for the that to be honest, for the most part, I did have a lot of fun with this movie. I think the reason for it is I really did let myself just enjoy it as a sheer spectacle. And it felt in parts very much like one of the big crossover event comics that you now have. And I did enjoy the fact that there was a few multiple plot lines and like multiple events happening simultaneously going on, because they did their best to try to bring everyone, like Smash Bros says, everybody's here.
It's not, I will say, I will say it's not the worst. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen. I think they were trying so hard to cram so much into two films. There are some great things in it. I will say, for all of my criticisms of backstage stuff with Marvel trying to like pull the heartstrings of the fans using the actors instead of the characters they portray, Josh Brolin as Thanos giving in to his sexy daddy Kevin Costner Yellowstone energy is great. The whole like TikTok of him going to buy Magnum condoms with his wife. So it's like not queer baity because he's very obviously straight, but it's also something gay fans can enjoy, which is the it's less queer baity because he's being very, it's very much Eric Dane in that way. It's just the movie itself, there's a lot of sacrifice, but most of it is like walled off by the noise of the rest of the movie. Like it's really hard for me because I was invested in Gamora, but it's so hard for me to like mourn Gamora when the next scene comes so quickly. It just is one of those things where like you can't do all the sacrifice at once because I'm so invested in Gamora and then we're gonna lose Bucky. And it's like I just it's so many things happening at one time that it really robs you of the ability to follow the journey of the people you actually really love when everybody is there. It's not the Sandlot, you know?
And dare I say, you have to get sort of the maximum effect, you really have to have gone through everything beforehand. And this is where it's starting to become a bit of an issue with. As you say, this was the 19th slash 20th outing that you had. That's a lot of movies. And, there are people that are just going to be casual fans of the franchise. They're not going to really care for watching everything. And the issue comes then, does that mean they get the full impact of it? Or, it's tricky, and it's only going to become more so as the MCU goes into the later phases.
I will say for Infinity War, it is based on a crisis comic tie-in series way Civil War was, but it has a different motivation, with Thanos just wanting to call half of the universe. In the comics, Thanos and Deadpool are fighting over Death, who is a woman in the MCU universe, a woman skeleton, but still a woman, I guess. And so it has a different motivation that is much weaker, and it really does just feel like, you know, great purple daddy is foiled, but then secretly unfoils the hero's plans. Because every single domino of these different things, of these different stones, the superheroes arrive to either succeed, but but then it gets taken back immediately, or they arrive and they're already too late. And so, like, the heroes that we love of the MCU and the reasons we love them don't matter in Infinity War. They matter in Endgame, but I feel like if you took out Infinity War and just had Endgame, you can almost still succeed in the MCU. I think it is important because we are going to get Tony Stark's ultimate sacrifice next, which is kind of nice. But to get there, you got to sit through Elizabeth Olsen crying over Vision, who at this point, I don't think anybody really had any strong feelings for. Vision was like, kill me. And she was like, no. And then all of a sudden, Thanos had all the stones.
Yeah. The thing was, just to touch on the Vision quickly, I do feel a little bad for him. He never really had his own solo spotlight. He was always assumed within all the other events that were going on. Like, I think, to be honest, the most attention he ever got was right at the start during Age of Ultron, when he came into being, and then everyone was looking at him wondering what kind of powerful being had arrived, but he never really came into his own, did he?
Yeah, and Paul Bettany it's a very specific type of charming sexiness that almost more belong in the Kingsman universe, which is technically Marvel, but Paul Bettany does work as Vision, which is very niche almost, which isn't bad, but it doesn't fit in Marvel, where you have to be the biggest presence in the room almost. In order to catch the attention, like, you have to be Rocket Raccoon so you're not stepped on by Drax. So with Avengers Infinity War, kind of the last thing I want to do is I want to note, for people that were Steve Bucky shippers like me, it was really hard to see Bucky disappear, but we're not going to get the resolution in Endgame later. So when we talk about Endgame, I'm going to come back to the queer baiting idea that I started the episode off with about Tom Holland, but one of my favorite Marvel movies, which doesn't feel like a Marvel movie even though it came out the same year as Avengers Infinity War, is Venom. And we're going to kind of skip Deadpool because that's part of the X-Men universe we're not talking about. I don't really have anything to say about Ant-Man and the Wasp other than Paul Rudd was still sexy in it. But Venom is a Columbia Pictures movie, which is a offshoot of Marvel Studios. Venom feels completely different. It feels grungy. It feels more homegrown. A lot of the criticisms about body type in the MCU doesn't apply to Venom because Tom Hardy works out, but it's much more natural. For people that have loved Tom Hardy for a long time, after seeing him in like Bronson, it's not a surprise that he approaches Venom like a Jekyll and Hyde werewolf scenario. It's not really a surprise he does bisexual energy because he's played gay characters in Guy Ritchie movies to great effect. I think Venom is probably one of the best Marvel movies. It's definitely up there, and I've said that about four movies now. But I think for me, because Venom transcends the superhero formula purposely, it reminds me more of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans when it was still new and fresh and people were enjoying it. It's a movie that doesn't take itself seriously. It's a movie that critics absolutely hated, but was the seventh highest grossing movie of 2018. Wow. Not of superhero movies, but of all movies in 2018. It was the seventh highest. Tom Hardy is remarkable. Michelle Williams in interviews talking about, yes, I did this for the paycheck. And the guy playing her boyfriend, who I have a list of the cast here, Reed Scott, who is also one of my favorite side characters from The Marvelous Miss Maisel. He plays Gordon, the talk show host. There's something really great here. It's about the idea of bisexuality. It's about the idea of finding yourself. It's about the idea of Tom Hardy being absolutely chaotically crazy, needing a live lobster out of a fish tank. There's something really sexy about this movie because it's not just about sex. It's about companionship and loneliness and learning to understand each other. And it's something that we really only see in the MCU with Steve in that fish out of water way. We really don't see it with Thor because he has these two different lives. We don't see it with Robert Downey Jr. because Tony Stark builds mechanical walls around himself to let people in and out. I feel like Venom is the perfect shadow of Captain America in some ways. Whereas you think it would be the Punisher or you think it would be Daredevil, I really feel like specifically Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock, who I was a little suspicious of because my Eddie Brock has always been blonde. I didn't care for Topher Grace as Venom because it was so underutilized. I think Venom is probably one of the best superhero movies ever made. It's really old school, but with present techniques, it honors the characters, but doesn't get so stuck in the comics that it can't do anything with them. There's something very human about Venom, about Eddie Brock, that is so incredibly sexy. And even though they do a mid scene with Woody Harrelson as Cletus Cassidy, who's going to become Carnage in the sequel, it's not bad. I've always been a fan of Tom Hardy. I think his work is exquisite. It is dark. It is hard. He is fearless. But he also doesn't take himself too seriously.
No.
The plot even of Venom is tight. Like the plot of this movie is even tight, which is great too. It doesn't like meander. It really gets to it, and it's not afraid of being who it is. It's Venom, and I absolutely loved it, and I'm so grateful. And I definitely have sexy Tom Hardy Venom swag that I will not apologize for. Also, Riz Ahmed is in this movie.
What do you think of all the fan shipping of Tom and Venom?
I think it's appropriate because that's the way their relationship was in the comics for years. Actually, what I love is comic Eddie Brock and Venom in this very loving relationship that's very symbiotic versus Tom, Eddie, and Venom, where they're basically bickering back and forth, and blonde Eddie and Venom are like, nope, I'm going to walk the other direction. Just ignore them. I think it's great. What's great is that this is based on Venom Lethal Protector and Planet of the Symbiotes from 93 and 95. But it also feels because current Marvel Venom run is doing Kree and it's doing kind of the Planet of the Symbiotes again in a different way, in kind of a zombified way, in a very conquering type way. This Venom feels very aggressive, but also feels human. This is a Venom where if Eddie was a coward, it would leave, which is a risk that I don't think Marvel would have taken with another property. So I'm really glad that Columbia did this. I too, when I first saw the trailer with the I'm gonna eat the guy robbing the convenience store's face off, was like, okay, I'm just gonna take it for what it is. But it was such a delightful surprise and such a refreshing palate cleanser after kind of the bloated, nothing matters Avengers Infinity War, because everything in Venom mattered. Everything that happened, everything was an action reaction. It was almost perfect superhero storytelling. It did harken back to Tobey Spider-Man. It harkened back a little more even to Blade. And if this had been like a reset tool, I think I could have been much more invested in the MCU. It's not just that Tom Hardy is sexy, and it's not just that he didn't bulk up to become Venom, like he didn't have that major exercise program. It's that Venom is a film where there's also She Venom. Michelle Williams takes on the mantle of Venom in this film. And so the one major criticism of Venom that I would have is the palette of it at night is very dark. But I have that same criticism of the Harry Potter movies where the palette at night is very dark and I would like to see things. By the way, fun fact about this, Tom Hardy does voice Venom as well as Eddie, but they modulated Venom's voice. So he doesn't actually sound like him, but it is Tom Hardy voicing and they've just done some stuff. They also do a nod to animated Spider-Man in here. The Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is part of this universe, but as an animated film. So it's almost like Eddie lives in our version of San Francisco. Like he could go to the place where Tales of the City was written, and it would actually make sense because that's definitely San Francisco weird. Yeah, Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock was a stroke of genius. I was dubious, but I had no reason to be. And I'm really glad this movie exists in the MCU. I really wish it hadn't had come out at the same year as Avengers Infinity War because I really wanted it to be celebrated more.
It was gonna get overshadowed by Infinity War. I think that was pretty much the movie event of the year, to be honest. And nothing else is gonna challenge it. I will say I completely agree with about the Tom Hardy zaniness. He's one of these actors that really commits himself to his roles and such. But at the same time, like you can tell when he's having fun with what he's doing. And he actually has a passion for it. And I think that passion for acting is something that is so important for all these really good roles to come through. And yeah, I mean, you could just tell the difference between people that's actually into it and the people that are phoning it in. And clearly, Tom was fully on board to be playing someone with a psychotic alien symbiote living inside his body.
Well, the reason I think of him as the shadow of Captain America is especially because Chris Evans' Captain America was such a thoughtful character to study and so different than what we expected. The kind of academic breakdowns of Captain America, the First Avenger, and Venom parallel each other a little bit in people being intrigued by this hot guy thrust into this world. And I think it really works really well, and it brings me joy to have it in the world. It brings me almost the complete opposite feeling that I have toward things like Dark Phoenix, where they basically retcon a whole universe and decide to kill characters pell-mell. And it almost feels like completely different studios made, even though they're technically from same properties, technically same different universes and different parts of the timeline, they feel completely different. And when we get to like the New Mutants, which is the only movie from 2020 in the Marvel Universe, you start to really feel like they're losing grip on the size of the property. Like they were on the horse for a while and they were able to maintain it when it was like six people, but now it's like 400 and they're getting a little wild on the horse. So like Captain Marvel was really great, but I don't really have anything to say about it as far as leads because the lead was female. Not bad. I like Brie Larson, but that's kind of going to be its own thing if we ever talk about Captain Marvel. I don't have anything to say about Avengers Endgame except that it proves that Marvel knew it could queer bait us because of the 5 second blink and you'll miss it scene with the one queer man that is the side character that we never see. And that was an Endgame, and that was a specific, direct, complete reference because it was no mistake that Steve was in that group and that Steve was in that room. And then we never get anything resolved about it. And then at the end of the film, Steve goes and visits Peggy again and leaves Bucky behind, who is arguably his one true love in this version of the MCU. Endgame for me is also the movie of inappropriate endings because they kill off Tony Stark and then they don't tell the actors that are going to a funeral. They tell them they're going to a wedding. So we get celebratory behind the scene cast photos, and then people are acting against themselves and against green screens and against others, and they don't actually know what they're acting for. Avengers Endgame is where the secrecy gets so high that now the actors that they brought in with these huge pedigrees can't act. It's green screen, it's jury duty, and it's like so much of it. And it's just Avengers Endgame. I think end is the appropriate. It's kind of the end of the dream for me, even for the characters I love.
It's the end of an era. the cast overall that they've had up to this point pretty much fractures as the original Avengers, for the most part, go their separate ways. Like as you say, either through sacrifice or with that sacrifice, Black Widow and Iron Man finding an ending, like Cap, even though it was
This
pretty
was.
rushed. They could have, why didn't he stop and like say his goodbyes?
This is also the film
Yeah.
where they basically fat shame Thor for not dealing with his grief over the loss of Loki. I can't really forgive a studio that decides it's okay to make fun of fat people, but also having it be related to grief and PTSD and having Captain America, Steve Rogers, Chris Evans, of all people, fat shame a friend who has gone through this great ordeal. Yes, maybe he wasn't dealing with it appropriately, but there's a lot in Endgame that is just like the crumbling of a personality that people had gotten to know over years and years for one specific plot, so you could do one specific thing. And it just, except for like the Paul Rudd Captain America smut that was then official because they were in the same room, there's something about especially taking Chris Evans as Steve Rogers and almost destroying his personality because you don't, I guess you don't believe in a world where Anthony Mackie's Captain America and Steve Rogers' Captain America can be in the same room. I don't know. I don't know what it was about, but Endgame is one of those movies that is kind of the dark point of a whole studio. It's the Gigi, if I'm talking about MGM, it's the Gigi of the MCU universe. And for people that don't know, Gigi was the last MGM Golden Era musical, and it was pretty much universally reviled for a long time because it was overstuffed and excessive and didn't matter. And it was right before we started doing musicals like Cabaret that were darker and had more important songs to them. But yeah, it's Endgame is the Gigi of superhero movies in a lot of ways.
Yes. I will say that I can see the flaws of Endgame. I did still enjoy it a huge amount, probably for the same reasons that I loved Infinity War. I just loved the spectacle of it. It did get a little convoluted with what they were up to. I remember being in the cinema starting to scratch my head slightly with the some of the issues with the time travel mechanic. But at some point I just said to myself just to enjoy the movie if what it was.
Yeah.
At the same time though, it's so bittersweet because it's very clear the ending of something. And you could just sense it as you're watching it. And that does add a bit of a sadness to it while you're watching this movie. And then you see what comes next. And
Yeah. Well, so here's, I want you to be able to talk about Far From Home because I know how much you love Tom Holland. And I think they do some great pieces about grief in this film, especially with Tom and Abby. But it feels like it's so soon after Tony Stark. If they had just given it a year afterwards before they put Far From Home out, because Far From Home came out the same year as Endgame. It feels like it's a film about grief and moving on, but also sexy daddy Gyllenhaal is in it in order to make it a superhero film. And as much as I love Jake Gyllenhaal, I kind of wonder what the movie would have been like if it had been a movie about Spider-Man dealing with the grief and loss of Tony Stark. Because if they were going to go there, they could have gone there and it would have been exquisite and painful, but it would have had so much meaning. As it is, Far From Home is kind of the Peter Parker sells his soul to Mephisto storyline, but not fulfilled because they don't have Mephisto in this portion of the MCU. It's not a comic
Oh
book.
no.
And so it's very much like Far From Home read to me like it was going to go the Mephisto route, and then it didn't. but it also couldn't commit to being a movie about grief. I feel like Jake Gyllenhaal is almost so much like Tony Stark in this film. He's distracting. He's not, obviously. He's Jake Gyllenhaal, not Robert Downey Jr.
Well,
but it felt like they were trying too hard to me. So,
well, this comes back to the whole issue that a number of people have brought up with the Tom Holland Spider-Man films, is that he always feels like he's sharing the screen with other people. And that he doesn't, that sometimes Spider-Man doesn't feel like he's the main and only star of his movies. So, Homecoming, you had Tony Stark in it as Iron Man. Far From Home was Gyllenhaal and Mysterio. And then No Way Home, you had Doctor Strange, and then the whole gaggle of other Spider-Men and their returning villains and what have you. It always feels like they're adding in, dare I say, other like father figures and such, or surrogate mentors and such. And it's only really towards the end, going past Far From Home into No Way Home, and it's only really the last ending scene that Peter now is completely by himself, and he's starting to really define himself and find himself. The fact that it's left on such an open, like, it's like an open door for Peter to return, for Tom to return as Peter, pretty much, in the future. It's very comic-esque in that way. Far From Home, I did enjoy it very much so. But yes, I agree that there's so much action and so much going on, there isn't a moment for Peter to stop and really, in a way, confront how he's feeling.
Yeah.
There is no way to stop and just take time to think about things.
Well, and in the comics, too, Spider-Man has Deadpool, has Daredevil, has the Fantastic Four. The MCU set up this found family and then put him on the outskirts of it without the support of even, like, Wolverine. And in the comics or in the Lego games, Spider-Man is their own person, but they always feel like they have support. They have Black Cat, or they have MJ, and it always feels like Tom Holland is kind of like on the outside of the orbit, even though he's a main character. I feel like Taron Egerton in the Kingsman series had more agency in some ways.
That's a good point, because Spider-Man was part of Tony Stark's side of the Civil War, what have you, but he was never actually an official Avenger that was part of, like, the Avengers team Tony put together. And then he appeared in the battle for Endgame, but he was like part of the overall forces rather than part of a team. He never really belonged on any particular grouping. He was just more like acquainted with figures like you look at No Way Home. He knows of Doctor Strange, but they don't really have a prior friendship or relationship. They're just acquaintances.
No matter how much the fan art wants it to be otherwise. So here's something interesting too, is that we're going to move on from Far From Home, not completely, just in the course of this. So the New Mutants is going to come out in 2020. And this is actually a very good MCU film. This is a film about young teens that think they're training to be X-Men, but they're being trained to be, like, assassin spies. And the New Mutants has that kind of energy where you could have put Tom Holland as Spider-Man in there, and it could have worked. I think the New Mutants is great because the terrors that they face are all kind of coming from inside. I think the Smiling Men is really great as a villain in an M. Night Shyamalan sort of way when he was still very good at what he did. So the New Mutants is the only MCU movie in 2020, as opposed to, like, 2019 to 2016 when we had 4 to 5 a year. The New Mutants is the only thing coming out that year. And yes, we had stuff on streaming, but the New Mutants wasn't really I saw trailers for it, but I was so Marvel exhausted at that point, I had to come back later to enjoy it. And I liked the New Mutants. I thought it was, yeah.
Something to keep in mind. New Mutants, that was a canon survivor from Fox's X-Men, from what I understood. So it wasn't actually something that the MCU was putting them together themselves. This was going to be part of Fox's X-Men series, but when they got bought out, AMC retroactively added it to their canon.
So I was a big fan for the first two seasons of the TV show Legion, which is about David Haller. And when we talk about X-Men, I'm going to talk about Legion more in full. I feel like it should have been flipped, where Legion was the one that got the movie and the New Mutants, because the New Mutants had the potential to be a multi-story arc about these five teens. And what's really problematic is that this is the only Native American mutant, metahuman superhero in MCU canon. The lead of the lead actor in the New Mutants is the only Native American MCU superhero, and the fact that this movie just was deluged in the quicksand of late Marvel is hard, because it's actually it deserves to be seen and have like a light shined on it. Because it had a lot of potential for, if MCU was so hyper focused on the idea of groups, if MCU was so hyper focused on found family, if MCU was so hyper focused on showing, hey, we're not racist, we're gonna show people of color doing things. New Mutants, it was right there, you know.
But does it, we discussed before about the House of Mouse taking Marvel and sanitizing it to a degree to make it palatable for a wide audience. Would you almost agree if that New Mutants fits into the wider MCU themically, though?
I think it doesn't, but I think if we're talking about Disney as a whole and Disney looking at Marvel and Star Wars properties especially, New Mutants has a twin with Cruella, the Cruella remake with Emma Stone that does this weird punk Devil Wears Prada thing, which I have thoughts about, and they're not as good as other people's thoughts. But the New Mutants and Cruella have this potential to take punk energy into otherwise really glossy, high art brands like 101 Dalmatians, and really gritty it down, dirty it down, add a great soundtrack, add really interesting ideas. I think that the New Mutants, if they had really had faith that it was going to succeed, I think it could have succeeded, because it's at least as good as Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. It's at least as good as Peregrine. And that movie is not bad by any stretch. So, for being the only Marvel movie that came out in 2020, I know they were concentrating on streaming at that point. I know everybody was going ape over Loki, but like, there was a chance for a Marvel non-MCU renaissance with Legion. And it felt like it could have happened, and the energy was there, and the fan base was there, and it didn't. And it was a real misstep. And if nothing else comes out of this third episode, people, please go find New Mutants somewhere and watch it. And I'm telling you, it's kind of, especially if you're a queer person, the idea of your own inner demons being the thing chasing after you, it resonates so much. And I'm not like angry about it, but like I'm kind of passionate about, I want people to see it for the thing that we know the MCU can do really well when they're not like so constrained by their own formula.
So we've touched on New Mutants, we've gone past Endgame and such. I think we should proceed forward into other territory. Just to sort of, just because we see if we can keep to wrapping up
I think
everything for the third
the
episode.
kind of the two big ones, because they don't have anything to say about Shang-Chi except Simu Liu is amazing, and I'm glad he was able to kind of like fight back against the haters, because I don't really have any romantic feelings for Shang-Chi as a film. Eternals was the film where everybody was sexy, and then nothing happened, and no one saw it. And and then we have Kraven the Hunter, and Kraven is super sexy, and hopefully it's much better. Hopefully it gets much better press than the Eternals did, because I don't think even the I don't know if anybody liked the Eternals, really. I couldn't say. I think
It's
they were pretty. I love Richard Madden. I'm not mad
no.
about it.
Oh yes, love Richard Madden as well. Quick thoughts about Eternals. At this point, we're really starting to see them, Marvel and Disney, really pushing its male lead actors to get physically fit and stay in shape for roles. Richard Madden, he portrayed himself everywhere. I forget one of, I forget who, which of his co-stars, like he also showed off his physique.
Probably Kit Harington. Kit Harington was in it.
I'd have to double check who that is. But yeah, at this point we're
Kumail Nanjiani was in it. I think Kumail is who you're thinking of.
He suddenly had his dadification. So we're starting at this point to see that happening. They did it a bit with Namor for the new Black Panther Wakanda Forever. I don't think he really took off as much as maybe Marvel was hoping, but it, they've introduced Namor now, and I doubt that he's only going to be in the one film, shall we say.
I will say I do love the Eternals because it gave us Barry Keoghan. This was his first big role, and then he went on to play in Banshees of Inisherin, which is a Colin Farrell, Colm Meaney film in which he plays an integral role in it, and it's a beautiful movie. The thing I think in wrapping up about Marvel that I want to say, and then you can do about any other thing you have because we got 7 minutes left on the episode. Marvel really gave us a chance to meet and re-meet actors that were amazing. The one great thing is also the Achilles heel, is that the movie is so staffed that there's so many people that then you can find an actor you fall in love with that you can follow into other projects. You know, Chris Evans as Steve Rogers begats Chris Evans as Ransom Drysdale from the Knives Out film. And I think there's more good moments than bad. Just because I'm exhausted doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. I do kind of wish Disney didn't own all these big properties because I feel like therein it's gonna have problems. But even in the middle of this, we get Venom. You know, for every Avengers Endgame, there is a Venom. And I think that is a really beautiful thing. And if you have a, everyone has a favorite hot man from Phase 3 onwards. So I don't know who yours is, but I would love to hear it. So.
Tricky. There's a, as you say, way too many attractive men in, and we're not even talk we're not even considering about all of the related stuff, as you say, like the streaming and what have you, which
Yeah.
are a lot of great choices as well. Oh, my head is swimming. I'm not even going to try and pick one out of a
Okay.
dozen potential answers.
I do have one more trivia question before I finish. So I'll let you do your thoughts, and then we'll do the trivia question as the final thought. So.
So overall, the Men of Marvel, it's really done a huge thing. At the end of the day, the MCU really has changed the popular culture scene in many ways. Some blatant, like, you can't escape the Avengers as the popular superhero team at the moment. They're literally everywhere. Kids have grown up with them, and so have teens. It's really established, I would say, Marvel ahead of DC in many ways. Now it's not going to eclipse Superman or Batman, who pretty much carries a lot of DC sometimes on his black shot on his black clad shoulders. However, Marvel is clearly ahead of the game. Now, there is a lot of superhero fatigue out there now, which is completely understandable. But you do see some productions of quality still coming out of it. They've done a re in terms of like the subtle stuff, like the success of the MCU has really pushed a lot of studios to start re-examining all of its IP again and really start bringing out more like classic stuff as connected universes. Now, this can be a good and a bad thing. We had like the Dark Universe, which I think it was Paramount Pictures tried to do, which is it Paramount was trying to do that?
Yeah, but it was
Yeah.
Paramount. They had bought Universal, so they were trying to do the
Ah.
dark version of the Universal Mummy, you know, kind
Yes.
of thing.
So they tried to do that. It flopped, but I know that they're going to try, other people are going to try and do it. But sorry, getting back on track. For all its faults that they've had emerging over the years with lack of diversity, both in terms of ethnicity, body type, etc., at the same time, there is still something really precious about what Marvel's done in terms of giving us lots of like leading men to enjoy the cinema. And those leading men have gone on to have some really great roles. You mentioned about Chris Evans moving on to Knives Out with Ransom and his other projects. I do wonder if some of these would have come about if he hadn't been Captain America. But overall, like the MCU has been a good thing. I think it is getting to the point where they need to start considering how much they're going to continue bringing out, but that's a discussion for another day.
All right, so here's a trivia question to kind of end this Marvel. And after Marvel, we're going to be doing some summer shorts, which will be shorter episodes, leading into Gay Christmas, which is also Halloween, as I said last time. So, but here's your kind of trivia. So, the Marvel movie universe includes things like Kick-Ass and Kingsman from the Icon Marvel imprint. Another Marvel imprint is called Malibu Comics. And Malibu Comics created a comic series that then became a series of kind of famous movies that are also part of the Marvel universe that are technically Marvel movies. And the first one came out in 97 and stars one of my favorite actors who is also one of my favorite Batman villains. So if you can think about what movies came out in 97, which franchise do you think it is?
Oh Christ, I really don't know.
All right.
I cannot
So,
think of the top of my
yeah.
head.
So I'll let people, if you want to pause this, and you can pause it and you can think about it and come back in a second. I'll give you a couple seconds here. So part of the Marvel Universe is the Men in Black series. Men in Black was written by Malibu Comics. And it was a Columbia Pictures presentation. So technically, the Men in Black, Tommy Lee Jones, Will Smith, even up to the cartoon, is part of the Marvel Universe, which I kind of love, which makes me wonder why they haven't used mind wiper things or we haven't seen any more Vincent D'Onofrio bugs. That was a lot, though. We basically went through 1986, the year I was born, all the way up to like Raven, who is, by the way, very sexy. Aaron Taylor Johnson living his Tarzan fantasy, and I'm living for it. I'm also living for all of you. Thank you, Magnus. Thank you, audience. And we'll see you next time on Everything Is Gay, even the straight stuff. Bye.
Ta-da.